Let's talk about hiring subs. I'm Justin Bader, and this is the Instructional Leadership Show. We are going to be facing an urgent crisis in terms of substitute coverage in the coming weeks, and it is only going to get worse. So I want to give you a few actions that you can take right now to head this thing off. This is episode 133 of the Instructional Leadership Show, hiring subs and ensuring coverage for every classroom. We have got to be on top of this because it is going to catch us off guard in the new year if we're not careful. So our essential question today is, how can we hire enough subs and ensure coverage for every classroom? So we have a number of things that are going on right now that make this an especially big challenge. First of all, we already are using subs in long-term positions because in a lot of cases, we weren't able to hire permanent teachers. So we're already tapping into our sub pool more than usual for long-term coverage. We're having difficulty hiring subs as a profession. Fewer people are interested in working in schools. It's less competitive with other job opportunities. The private sector is paying more now, and in a lot of cases, schools are not paying more. We are dealing with more absences, both of the traditional type of teachers being ill, but also teachers being quarantined and having a variety of other reasons that they may need to be out of school. We're also seeing, I think it's not an exaggeration to say, we're seeing a rise in teachers just taking the day off because they're so stressed, right? Sometimes people call this a mental health day. Sometimes people just cannot bring themselves to come in one more day. Even if they're not physically sick in the traditional sense, we are seeing a lot more absenteeism. And that set of factors, that convergence of factors is making it quite difficult to ensure that schools are fully staffed. But this has to be our priority, right? This has to be one of the most foundational things that we take care of as leaders, because if we don't have coverage for every class when a teacher is out, then pretty much everything grinds to a halt, right? If you're covering classes, you're not doing any of your other work that you're here to do. If you don't have substitutes, then that makes it incredibly difficult to do any kind of professional development. Just basically operations grind to a halt if we don't have substitutes. And especially if we're thinking, well, you know, I've got this other kind of high level stuff to focus on. I really need to work on our strategic planning initiative and this new data thing and the assessments. If you are in charge of substitutes or if you have influence on that side of things, then I want to encourage you to make this a big priority, because any other improvement work that you are doing is going to grind to a halt without substitutes. You've got to have substitutes to cover for PD days. You know, if you're going to send teachers to training or have any kind of meetings during the workday, you've got to have subs. And if you have staff who are normally dedicated to improving teaching and learning, like coaches and administrators and specialists, and if those people are getting pulled in to sub and to cover classes because you have unfilled absences, well, then obviously they can't do the improvement work that they were hired to do. And of course, teachers need to be able to get subs when they are sick. They need to be able to take the day off to go to a doctor's appointment or stay home with sick kids or take their kids to doctor's appointments and things like that. So just the normal use of subs is really imperiled right now. And I think we've got to really get a jump on that. And we have to plan ahead because hiring subs is not instantaneous. It takes, in most states, 4 to 6 weeks from the time someone shows up and says, yes, I want a sub in your district, to the time when you can actually send them into a classroom. And that's mainly due to fingerprinting and background checks and other similar kinds of legal requirements that are put in place before someone can be responsible for a room full of students. Now, they may not need to be certified. They may not need to be licensed. In a lot of places, you basically just have to have a high school diploma, maybe some college, maybe be a certain age, but you don't have to have a certification or a degree to be a substitute teacher. But here's the thing, and here's why this is going to catch so many people off guard. Normally, many of our subs are certified teachers, and they've already taken care of that background check and that fingerprinting and everything. So we don't normally have to worry about it too much. And we're not normally hiring on a strict deadline. People show up and say they want a sub. We tell them, great, you can sub in 4 to 6 weeks when your background check and fingerprints come back clear. And we're not normally trying to solve the problem in this way by specifically recruiting people. We're used to people just showing up, but we've really got to approach this differently this year I have to hand it to my old boss, Dr. Susan Enfield in the Seattle area. She's in Highline School District right now and has just done a fabulous job. She had an article, or she was quoted in an article on NPR recently about the steps that they were taking to ensure that they had coverage for every classroom. She personally got her substitute teacher credential. I don't know what that involves in Washington State, and in most states it's not a ton, but you do have to take some steps, and she went ahead and did that for herself in case she needed to cover classes. It's a big district, so she's probably not going to personally solve the problem by covering classes. So she also raised substitute pay and made an aggressive effort to get coverage to ensure that they had the subs they needed to keep school open. So we've got to do the same across the profession. And of course, the problem is going to vary in scope and severity from place to place. I'm going to suggest if you serve a high needs student population that this is probably a pretty dire issue right now. And I did a survey of just a few of our subscribers earlier this week and found that it is dire in quite a few places. And this really is something that we need to get on top of before the new year. So where can you look? Where can you find subs? You can, of course, look at recent college graduates, recent high school graduates, if they're old enough, if they meet the age requirements. You may have people who are considering going into teaching, but just kind of haven't gotten around to it yet or haven't enrolled in college. If they are eligible, those might be great people to come and sub and help out. You might want to look at parents of your current students. If you know parents who would be interested, ask teachers. You know, do you have anybody who would be, who's a parent in your class who might be a good sub? If you know of people who are finishing up jobs over the holidays in the retail or service sector, you know, there's a lot of seasonal hiring, and then in January those jobs go away after the holiday shopping rush. That would be a great pool of people to tap into. And you also want to tap into social networks. So ask teachers, not just about the parents in their classes, but their friends. You know, do you have friends from, you know, community things that you're in, you know, people in your personal life who you would want to substitute for you? And I think sometimes this is a very personal thing for teachers. They don't want to just hand their classroom over to anyone. They want to be able to trust someone. So recruiting via teachers' friends can be very helpful. I also want to encourage you to think about student teachers who may be in your district at the moment. Can you onboard them as subs right away? Maybe they already had to do the fingerprinting thing, and that's going to cut off a whole month in the hiring timeline. Is it possible that they could finish their program, their certification program, while working as a sub? That is worth asking about. That is worth looking into. They may have to have a supervised student teaching arrangement, but universities also may be a little bit flexible. So if they need to have their own classroom and do a long-term sub assignment, that may work as long as they have a mentor. Do look into it. And certainly, if you have people who are graduating in December, get a hold of them, get a hold of universities and say, hey, who do you have that's graduating right now? We will take them because we need subs. So finding people is a big part of the equation. The second big part of the equation, though, is making it easy for them to choose to work in your district as a sub. And we have to remember, people have other options, right? They could work in the private sector. They could, in many cases, not work. So if we make this too difficult, it is going to not go our way. So I want you to think through, what are currently all the required steps? Where is there friction in the hiring process that just makes it difficult for people to get on board and start working in classrooms? What are all those steps? Think also about physical locations. If you're in a large district, people might have to go downtown, and then you might have a different office that's involved in sub hiring that's actually in a different location, and you have to pay for parking. And there's just all this friction that may be making it difficult to get people on board. Are there expenses that people have to pay? You know, fees for a background check, fees for fingerprinting, and all those different steps. Could we cover some of that? Cover all of the expense, maybe offer parking passes, or just somehow make it easy and make it a one-stop shop, make it a one-step process for people. And if we don't, if we keep the friction in place and make this difficult for people, we've got to remember, corporate America is more than willing to beat us to the punch and eliminate that friction and make it easy and say, come on in, fill out this form, and we'll get you hired right away and you can get started. If we don't eliminate the friction in the hiring process, the private sector will beat us in competing for the same talent. Or think about restaurants, not just corporate America, even a restaurant, you can start right away. You know, if you have any kind of experience at all in the restaurant industry, very easy to get hired nowadays. They're hurting for workers. And in a lot of cases, it's the same pool of people. So we have got to make this easier. And I want to give you a specific point of friction to focus on in your hiring process, because this is both the most unpleasant part for candidates and it has the longest timeline. So one specific thing that you can focus on in your improvement efforts right now is fingerprinting. In, I think, every state, candidates have to be fingerprinted in order to work in classrooms. And of course, that's a good thing. We don't want to have people who would harm children or who already have harmed children being in the classroom for any reason. So we want to be careful about this. I'm not opposed to fingerprint requirements, but we have to think a little bit. Okay, for the person who has a choice of where to work, they could go work at a store, they could work at a restaurant, they could work in an office somewhere. What is the next step in order to become a sub? They have to get fingerprinted. In your town, where do people go to get fingerprinted? Now, I've been fingerprinted twice in my career, once when I was becoming a student teacher, and once when I moved to Washington State and became a public school teacher there. And I think in both cases, the place that I got fingerprinted was not the district office. Now, if you're in a big district, you might do this in your HR department, but in most places, you get fingerprinted, guess where? At the jail. So imagine telling a new candidate who is interested in substitute teaching in your district, oh, it's easy. First you go to jail and then you write them a check for $50 and then you wait 6 weeks. We've got to do better than that, my friend. We have got to make this easier for people, less unpleasant. We've got to hold their hands. We've got to make this convenient and fun. And I recommend that you look into partnering with local businesses on this. You know, if there is a boutique store or any kind of place where, you know, where people go and like to win prizes, you know, partner with that store to do some sort of event. If you can get people to go through the hiring the first steps of the hiring process, get their stuff sent in, do giveaways, you pay for it, you write the check to pay for their fingerprinting and send it all in. The more you make this easy for people, the more likely they are going to be to get through the process. So this is something you can reach out to local businesses. You can ask for gift card donations. You can give away spirit wear. I think district swag, district sweatshirts or t-shirts or whatever you have that can get people excited. Inviting local media can be helpful. Letting people ask questions, and most importantly, giving them information about, you know, how do I get trained? What days can I, you know, what are some of the logistics of the job? And most importantly, how much does it pay? If it is a complete mystery how much it pays, then people are not going to be very interested. Because as I drive down the road, what I see is now hiring $1,000 sign-on bonus. I see that at companies all the time. And if we're just kind of coy about how much we pay, not very many people are going to track us down and ask. So be specific about how much you pay. Say, we pay $175 a day, or we pay $140 a day, or whatever you pay. I'm going to guess that simply communicating it will make a difference, unless it's way too low. And in a lot of places, honestly, it's too low. We have got to look at increasing substitute pay. And that was one of the things that Dr. Enfield did in Highline, is they increased the pay. Did you see how much it was? I think it was 200 and something dollars a day, because they knew that people have options. People have other places they can work, and they have the option of not working in a lot of cases. So we have got to pay more. A couple of places to look at your pay structure. Of course, the daily rate, how much do people get for coming in for the day? Are there any bonuses that people get for coming in frequently? You know, if you work a certain number of days in a month, or is there a signing bonus the first time you, you do your first 10 sub days, maybe you get $1,000 or something like that. And can we guarantee work on certain days of the week? Maybe people need some steadiness and they're hesitant to take a job where they may or may not get called. Well, maybe you say, all right, look, for the next month, we guarantee 5 days a week, or we guarantee Monday, Wednesday, Friday, or whatever the person wants to work. People need a little bit of assurance and security, and the private sector is offering that. So what I want to encourage you to do at the very least is take some action and at least collect some data. Talk to your principals if you're a central office administrator. Figure out what they're dealing with in terms of sub shortages. Are positions going unfilled when teachers are out? How often are the administrators and coaches and other professionals having to cover for unfilled absences? Find that out. Figure out what you're dealing with and let's take action. There is a lag time. It is going to take a number of weeks to get people on board, but I want to encourage you to take action on this now. I'm Justin Bader. Have a wonderful day, and I will catch you next time on the Instructional Leadership Show.